Go ahead and call the meeting back to order. We're going to have the mortgage lending bill, House Bill 162, presented here. We have no intention of taking action on this bill today, but we're going to hear it. I'd like to have the sponsor, Rep. Lynn, come forward. And we're going to take, and just stay in that chair and don't go anywhere. We're going to take a brief at ease. New CS and Senator Elton, could you make a motion, please?
I move Senate Committee substitute for CS for House Bill 162 /N version. Mr. Chair, ask for unanimous consent.
We have a motion to adopt the new CS version N on the table. Any objections? Seeing none. Rep. Lynn, if you could please walk us through this bill, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Again, thank you for hearing HB 162 today. First of all, of course, I need to disclose that I'm in fact a licensed real estate broker in the state of Alaska, currently in referral status. My license is hung as a broker associate with a potential investor up in Anchorage. For most of us, the biggest loan we'll ever get in our entire lifetime is for the mortgage on our home. And if we don't get the right loan or the right terms, it can be a very expensive 30-year mistake. Most of us who take out mortgages don't know much about the hidden mechanisms and inner workings of these loans or the ever-changing state and federal mortgage laws. It seems like it's something different every day, if even more than once a day. I recognized that fact when I was a working realtor. The most important thing I know about mortgages is what I don't know. And so that's why my first step as a realtor, when I was fortunate enough to find a home buyer, was to take that home buyer to a lender who knew what they were doing. A lender I had reason to believe knew the law, a lender who was qualified to match the proper loan to my buyer, work through any problems, and there are always problems, and with whom I had reason to believe was honest. And quite frankly, having a good lender was even more important than finding my buyer the perfect home and the perfect location. The importance of qualified lenders to consumers is exactly why I sponsored this bill. This bill has the strong support of the Alaska Mortgage Bankers Association, the Alaska Mortgage Brokers Association, Alaska Independent Lenders Association, and realtors throughout the state. And the Alaska Division of Banking and Security also supports this bill, and I hope, obviously, that the committee joins in that support. Persons working in the Alaska mortgage industry who are not licensed are not required to have any training, and let me repeat that. Persons working in the Alaska mortgage industry are not licensed. They're not required to have any training. We could go into business ourselves right here at this table without having to have a license, without having any training. Alaska is the only state in the union that does not regulate mortgage lenders. Now, tattoo artists and the person who cuts what little hair I have and all other kinds of people are licensed, must have training, but currently, someone who attempts to rent a mortgage for you or your kid or your mother, a sibling, needs no training or license at all, and that's scary. In fact, I think it's incredible. Not only that, none of these people are required to have background checks. They're not subject to periodic examination by the Division of Banking and Securities, and this bill is aimed to fix that. Some people would like to exempt affiliates, but some of them are internet companies operating outside Alaska. I would like this bill to license everybody in Alaska who makes a home loan. There needs to be a level playing field, whether the loan originator works in a large or a small outfit, regardless of location. As I said, state and federal laws concerning loan originations are complex and ever-changing, and one needs to be an expert to speak with any kind of competence on the subject of the bill before you today. I'm sorry to tell you, I am not that person. However, Mark Davis, the Division of Marketing, Banking and Security, is one of those people, and people in the lending industry are also prepared to help walk you through this bill and explain why it's written as it is, what's behind it, and answer questions. Again, in closing, this is in fact a consumer protection bill. I think it's of great importance. I respectfully ask for your support of HB 162. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. May we have Mr. Mark Davis come forward. Mr. Davis, if you could introduce yourself and who you represent, and then give us a few thoughts on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mark Davis. I'm the Director of the Division of Banking and Securities for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. The bill you have before you would license mortgage bankers, mortgage brokers, and originators. Presently, there are no state licensing requirements. There are, however, federal statutes that already apply to mortgages. There are 10 federal statutes, but right now there's no way to ensure that the mortgages being done in this state are in compliance with those laws. So this bill, in 060-250, provides for state examination and investigation of licensees. It then prohibits certain acts. 320, for example, would prohibit deceptive advertising. 330 would require compliance with those federal laws that already exist, which include the Truth in Lending Act and RESPA. It would allow for disciplinary action against the licensee who did a mortgage in violation of those standards, and would provide for a way for the state to examine, much as we do in the securities, to make sure that the licensees are following the law and are educated. So the it also prohibits some predatory practices. The largest one is in 350, which is the practice that's commonly called flipping, which is refinancing within 12 months, which is not in the best interest of the borrower. But the best deterrent is not just the force of the law, but also education.
Call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. Today's still May 10th. It's about 23 minutes after 6 p.m. 2007. With me this evening is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Elton, Senator Thomas, and Senator Dyson. And today, or this evening, we're continuing our work on Senate Bill 104, the Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act, better known by the acronym of GIA. Also in the audience is Senator Ellis with us this evening. What I would like to do is, well, let me back up a little bit. Yesterday we adopted a CS. This evening we have a new CS that incorporates all of the previous CS plus a couple of additional items. And with that, Senator Hoffman may have a motion to adopt the new CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt CS for Senate Bill 104 Finance Version T by Bullock, dated 5/10/07, as a working document.
We have a motion on the table to adopt a new CS version T. Any objection? Seeing no objection, version T is our document. We have brought forward Mr. Steve Porter from my staff and Ms. Marcia Davis, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. What I'd like to do is ask Mr. Porter to identify himself, who he represents, works for, and walk through the changes this evening.
Thank you. My name is Steve Porter, legislative aide to Senator Stedman. What we'd like to do is to walk through the changes from draft N to draft T, and we'll walk you through page by page. If you'll turn to page 2, 4391.10, number 1, you'll notice that subject to appropriations of state matching contributions, there was an insert in the form of reimbursements placed there. And so that's an insert.
Mr. Porter, could you identify page and line number?
Yes, sir. Page 2, line 17, is where it starts. It'd be line 17 and line 18. Marcia Davis would also like to comment on that.
My name is Marcia Davis. I'm Deputy Commissioner for Department of Revenue. The reason for this technical amendment was because in the violation section, we're identifying what the inappropriate conduct is, the violation, which is to request for reimbursement monies for an expenditure that does not meet the qualifications as a qualified expenditure. We needed to make it very clear that the state will be providing money in the $500 million grant fund for reimbursements and not as the initial outlay of cash. So that way there is adequate support and identification of the cost before monies are provided for that particular expenditure.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Elton.
Just a process question. Do you want us to hold our questions until the end or just as issues come up? How do you want to do that?
Well, I think the more we hold the questions, the sooner we'll be done this evening. But if you have a feel a substantive question, I'd go ahead and offer it when we're on the item. After we walk through, there will be half a dozen amendments that we'll talk about.
Okay, so I'm anticipating then from your answer, Mr. Chair, that there will be time for questions either later tonight or tomorrow.
Well, there won't be a tomorrow except for the floor. Okay. The plan is to move the bill out tonight unless there are some issues that arise. I think that when we walk through this, we could get some feedback from the administration on what they feel the draft is before amendments.
Excuse me, Chairman Stedman, did you ask a question?
Well, I just mentioned that when we get done walking through the changes here, we could have the representative from the administration reflect on what they feel they're if they support version T or not.
Understood. Thank you.
Senator Stedman, the next change would actually be on page 2, line 24. It says the state shall, it used to say match, it now says reimburse the licensee's qualified expenditures. Same with on same page, page 2, line 29, the shall match was changed to shall reimburse. The next change is actually on page 3. It starts at line 4, and we've inserted some language. It now reads, and directly and reasonably related to, and this is where the insert, to pursuing firm transportation commitments in a binding open season, to secure financing for the project, or, and then to obtain a certificate was already in there, so that language is inserted to expand the what the licensee could actually perform during that time frame. You want to comment on that? Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dyson.
Back on the previous page, this consistent language here, it would seem to me that has the effect of cutting in half the amount of money for the work that would be done during this period. When we used to say we were going to match, if it was going to cost $2 million or $1 million to do the right-of-way work or the environmental impact work, and the company was going to put in $500 million, if we're just reimbursing them, does that have the effect of cutting down the money that's available for the project?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, the actual language change is going to be at the beginning on page 2, subparagraph 1, beginning 17, subject to appropriation, state matching contributions in the form of reimbursements in a total amount not to exceed $500 million paid to the lessee as awarded, but the actual matching percentage is still in play. So if they say, I want a match prior to open season of 40%, it will be a reimbursement up to the 40%. So the percentage level of match is still in play. The only thing that the addition of the word reimburse does is affect the timing, so that the state isn't paying the match at the outlay, the initial outlay of cash by that licensee, but rather it's after they've outlaid, provided the documentary support, then we provide the reimbursement, but still subject to those caps of percentages.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dyson. Please continue.
On page 3, line 30, the additional language was added. After the semicolon on line 30, the applicant shall file with the commissioners the number of copies of the application and any amended application required by the commissioners. At the same time the copies of the application or an amended application are filed with the commissioners, the applicant shall provide 6 copies of the application or amended application to the presiding officer of each chamber of the legislature. That language has been added. The administration may wish to clarify that slightly, and we'll talk about that after we go through the bill. We're moving several pages. Page 11. It's actually at the top of page 12. Page, line 3 on the top of page 12 reads, after the commissioners determine that, and it used to say an application is complete, it now reads that the applications are complete. It's just a cleanup of that language. The next change will be, yes.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, the importance of that change was it had previously been plural, that sentence, because the idea was that all of the information comes in at one time, and then once it comes in and is determined complete, boom, then it goes out, because we were trying to make sure that no one got cheated by information trickling out around the edges while we were waiting for the application time to be completed. And so when this got changed in the last go-around to singular, you know, after they determined that an application is complete, then it gets disclosed to the legislative auditors and whatnot, we lost that connection. Then it became an application by application piece and got disconnected from the decision of all complete, boom, now we go. So that was just one of the concerns.
And the next change is on page 12, line 20, the addition of 6, so that at a minimum discount rates of 2%, 5%, 6%, and 8%. One of the discussions in the past was should it be what those rates should be. It was recognized that 5% and 6% both were valid evaluation criteria. 6 has been used in the past for some of the state's information. It was appropriate to run 6 on this as well. 5 is also a standard review within the within the modeling groups. So they just determined that you might as well run them both. Next would be on page 15. Okay. Line 4, it says the regulatory agency with jurisdiction over the project shall accept the certificate. There's an addition insert there that says on or before the date the order was order granting certificate. So basically on or before the date was an insert, so that it reads shall accept the certificate on or before the date the order granting the certificate is no longer subject to judicial review, which is a clarification. There was also, at the end of line 5 of that same sentence, there's a period at the end of judicial review. There was a deletion, or earlier at the licensee's discretion was deleted. The next change is on page 16 in F. And actually, there's a clarification here I'd like to make throughout the document. There, in the earlier document, on document T, the words amended certificate were used, and amended certificate has been deleted from this document. And what we did instead is the definition of certificate, which we'll cover later in this presentation, was changed to include both certificate and language sufficient to cover amended certificate as well. As well, on this one, there was also an insertion of, on line three, it says certificate of public convenience and necessity means the earlier of the date, the order granting. The earlier of was actually an insertion. And in addition to that, there was some additional language, so that the earlier of the date, the order granting the certificate is no longer subject to judicial review, and the additional language, or the date the licensee accepts the certificate was added. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead and clarify it.
On page 15, line 30, the sentence, a transfer under C of this section used to end with is at the licensee's net cost, and we had cleaned that up in a subsequent section to instead of saying is at the licensee's net cost, we changed it to be shall be subject to the state's payment to the licensee of net amount of expenditures incurred and paid by licensee that are qualified expenditures. So again, the tightening up to make sure net only covered qualified expenditures.
Okay. The next change is actually on page 16, line 9. We actually deleted, it just says jurisdiction over the project or by the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. It used to say an order issued by the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. That has been deleted, and just or by has been inserted in there. And actually the same down on line 15, where it says, or by the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, we actually deleted or an order issued by there as well. And then on line 16, same page, 17, says substantially diminished the value of the project. It used to say the net present value of the project. Net present has been deleted as well.
And as a clarification, the prior version had net present deleted, so somehow it popped back in. So it was probably just a technical error.
Next change will be on page 17, line 4. We actually added the when and as sent by the when and as was inserted so that it says receive all relevant notices when and as issued and information when and as sent. The next change is on page 18. Line 26. The language used to say if the commissioners or the licensee find that the project is uneconomic and the other parties disagree, it now reads if the commissioners and the licensee do not agree. So and was inserted and do not agree was inserted. That the project is, and this is really a clarification that commissioners and licensees don't make findings, they disagree. So it's just clarification of language appropriate to the parties. Next one is page 20, line 27. Just a clarification, the title has actually changed from qualifications for resource inducement to resource inducements. We made a plural. 310, let's see, page... See, got it, thank you. Page 23, line 8. Those of you in the that were in the Resources Committee will actually find this language somewhat familiar. After AS 439130, paren 7, the following language is inserted. If the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission does not have a rebuttable presumption in effect, that rolled-in treatment applies to the cost of the expansion of the project. That clause itself is in three places, and I'll reference it in all three. This is the first of three. And that's on line 8, 9, and 10 of page 23. That language is also added on line 9 of page 24. On lines 9, 10, and 11 of page 24. And on page 25, lines 9, 10, and 11. The next change is on line 25, I mean on page 25, line 30. And it says it shall, the applicants receive matching contributions. The following was inserted. In the form of reimbursements was inserted after contributions. The next change is on line page 26. Line 22, the last word of that sentence says commercial operations. It's just making operations from singular to plural. Okay, the next one is something we mentioned earlier, basically the change in the definition of the certificate on page 28, starting at line 31. Proceeding on to page 20, lines 1 through 5. What we did here is amended certificate. The definition of amended certificate was deleted from version T. And the definition on number 4, certificate of public convenience and necessity, and certificate was inserted. It means a certificate of public convenience and necessity issued by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission or the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and a certificate of public convenience and necessity issued by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission under 15 U.S.C. 719, Alaska Natural Gas Transportation Act of 1976, that is amended to comply with the terms of the license. There was a renumbering under the numbers before that to comply with the applicant was renumbered to 3. The next change is on page 30, lines the definition of number 17, open season. There was an insertion after the semicolon. Actually, it wasn't a semicolon. After the parens open seasons for Alaska natural gas transportation projects, the following, the rest of that language was actually inserted. Or similar procedures for soliciting commitments for pipeline capacity under the regulations, policies, rules, or precedent of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Those are all the changes, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. Do we have any initial questions from committee members? There is some amendments. We could pass amendment number 1 out. Yeah, we'll just pass them out one at a time. Maybe it'll make it easier at the table, I think. We have them packet. If you have them in a packet, just do the whole packet. We'll just stand at ease for a minute while we get the amendments passed up.
Jane here now.
Amendment number one. I'll move amendment number one and object for discussion. Amendment number one, page three. Line 10. Insert between cost and litigation in the last sentence the word lobbying costs. What this will do is disallow lobbying costs. Commissioner Galvin, would you like to speak to that amendment?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Pat Galvin, Commissioner of Revenue. We don't object to the amendment. We believe it's an appropriate recognition that if we're going to expand the allowable expenditures, that we ensure that we're not paying for lobbying costs.
Thank you. This amendment, just one of those issues that was picked up during the drafting of the CS. Any other questions? It's Senator Dyson.
Yeah. My major was engineering, not English, but my guess is you want a comma at the end of lobbying costs.
We'll add that at the end of the word costs, comma. Any other comments on the amendment? With that, I'll go ahead and remove my objection to amendment number one. Any further objections to amendment number one? Just a second, we'll go to Addie's. Sir? I'll go ahead and move amendment number six and object for discussion. Amendment number six would read page four, line four, following legislature, insert in a sealed envelope, and such envelope shall not be opened and the contents distributed until the receipt of the presiding officers of each chamber of notice that the commissioners have determined the applications are complete under AS 4391-40, and the presiding officer may open the envelope after signing a confidentiality agreement under AS 4391-60C. That would take the issue of the copies delivered to the presiding officers and keep them confidential until such time when it's applicable to have them in the public domain.
Senator Stedman.
Yes, Commissioner, please respond to that.
Okay. This still causes us concern. And the reason is that throughout this process, and the way that the government works, is the executive branch is responsible for implementing the laws. And as part of that, we are responsible for implementing the AGIA process. And that process has safeguards with regard to both the flow of the applications and the retention of the confidential materials. What this does is it throws outside of the process an additional language that, as far as I'm aware, is unprecedented anywhere else in state procedure, to have the information provided simultaneously to the executive branch and to the presiding officers. Now, there's no limitation in here on, once the presiding officers open these, whether they are bound to not distribute the confidential information as is provided in other sections with regard to the commissioners. It states that the commissioners can only provide the information to others once those others within the legislature have signed the confidentiality agreements provided by the commissioners. Now, this does not have those safeguards built into it. It's coming in from a completely different angle. I cannot understand the motivations, given that this information will basically be available to the legislature at the exact same time under this as under this other provision, as the existing provision. And the existing provision contains, the Department of Law has reviewed it and established that it's got the safeguards necessary to ensure that the integrity of the process remains. This is not worked out in that regard, and there are potential loopholes that I can already see. Secondly, the question about the confidentiality is just one part of concern about this additional language. The language at the bottom of page 3, line 31, talks about copies of the application or any amended application. Nowhere in the bill do we talk about them being able to submit an amended application. They submit an application, they supply additional information at the request of the commissioners. That information would be then made public, as well as the correspondence, when the applications are deemed complete. This just is basically additional process that's being tacked on here late in the day without us being able to work through the various pitfalls that may be associated with this additional process that, again, I'm not aware of exists anywhere else. And I would ask that the committee consider just deleting the language that's been added from page 3, line 30, following the semicolon, continuing on to page 4, line 4. And let's go back to what was in the original bill. Provides the legislature with full access to the information once it's deemed complete, full access to the confidential information, and ensures that there isn't any question after the fact about the integrity of the information flow.
Well, Senator Hoffman.
We have a brief at ease.
Yes. Well,
brief at ease.
Yes. Brief at ease. I'm gonna go ahead and pull amendment number 6. And then we'll do a conceptual amendment that we, on page 3, line 30, we delete following applications from the word "the" to the end of line 4, page 4.
Say that one more time, Bert.
We'll go ahead and delete from page 3, line 30, starting with, I guess we should take out the semicolon and make it a period.
The semicolon can stay.
Okay, right past the semicolon. Take out from the word "the" to the end of line 4, page 4. So we remove that clause. That'll be amendment. We'll make that amendment number 8. And I'll object for discussion. Does that take care of the issue?
Mm-hmm. I think it's number 7.
7 hasn't been offered yet.
Well, he's offered.
Well, no.
Oh, you're substituting it for number 6?
No. The chairman has other amendments.
Amendment number 6
has been withdrawn.
Right.
Now we're on amendment number 8.
Which
is
7 hasn't been passed out.
Yeah, we're on number 8.
Senator Stedman's still the chairman.
Just asking for clarification.
So we have any further discussion on the amendment? Senator Dyson.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I had to be off for a moment. what amendment are we on?
Eight.
Number eight.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Any further comment? I'll go ahead and move or remove my objection to amendment number eight. Any further objection to number eight? Okay, seeing none, amendment number eight prevails. And then I think we have amendment number seven. I think this is the last amendment tonight unless members have other amendments. I'll go ahead and move amendment number seven and object for discussion. And Commissioner Galvin, if you could highlight and explain amendment number seven, I'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is, as you heard earlier during the discussion about one of the changes that was made to this CS, there was a global change where the previously the term, everywhere the term certificate appeared with regard to a PERC certificate, it also included the clause or amended certificate. The global change that was done in the CS eliminated the or amended certificate and just embedded the concept of an amended certificate in the definition of certificate. What we've recognized is that the way that the amended certificate is referenced in the definition can be clarified further, and that is done through this amendment to at page 29, line 2, the insert following, and the words "an amendment to," and it would flow "a certificate issued under ANCTA previous certificate," and then strike, delete on page 29, line 4, everything after the parenthetical. So delete "that is amended to comply with the terms of the license."
And Commissioner Galvin, you're in support of this amendment?
Yes.
I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the amendment. Any further objection to the amendment? Seeing no further objection to the amendment number 7 is adopted. Do we have any other amendments that members would like to have on the table this evening? Seeing none, we'll have a brief at ease. We'll just have a brief at ease. May I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, hold it. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, before you make a movement here, I'm really pleased with the process and what we produced here. And, maybe it's a measure of my cynicism, but I'm surprised and pleased. And looks like there's been good cooperation with the administration. In the best of all worlds, I would have hoped that we could have had some of our consultants look at this overnight and kind of give us an overview and stuff before we voted it out here. My guess is I'm sympathetic to the time constraints that you're feeling and that be your view that that's not, even if it was appropriate, there isn't time for it. Anyways, I want you to know I appreciated the work we've done and the product it's produced.
Thank you, Senator Mason. The staff, and Senator Hoffman and myself and Senator Huggins spent a lot of time with the administration working through the details on this bill, so we had come to this point this evening with very few amendments, and a few that we voted on were ones that either one group or the other felt that it's best to vote it on the table and, you know, then just include it in the CS. So we try to get as much in the CS as possible and work these items out. I think it's been very smooth, and we have ample time before the end of the session to get it across the floor so we can move forward and get a gas line. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee pass out CS for Senate Bill 104 Finance as amended version T by Bullock, dated 5/10/07, with accompanying fiscal notes with individual recommendations.
We have a motion on the table to move the bill. Do we hear objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee with individual with accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations. And we'll, and before everybody gets too excited about dinner, let me get the schedule for tomorrow out.
Who's the guy?
Mr. Chairman, why are you doing that? Can I make a brief notation?
Who signed the Constitution with you?
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. You know, we just passed some monumental legislation, and Commissioner Galvin's been a centerpiece to that. But we had the unique opportunity. He hadn't been able to go home, so he brought his son, Sean, down there with us. And Sean, sitting back there with looks like an Oriole hat on, could you stand up? 13 years old, I think. Stand up, please. Let us recognize you. Hey.
Well, that concludes that concludes this evening's meeting. We'll be back at this table at 9 a.m. tomorrow. House Bill 87, Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. Senate Bill 144, Tourism Contract Matching Funds. And House Bill 162, Mortgage Lending. See everybody back at 9 a.m.